welcome to Radio Free HPC. This is where we talk about supercomputing, high-performance computing, and other technology topics. I'm your Toastmaster, Rich Bruckner from Inside HPC, with my co-hosts, Dan Olds from Gabriel Consulting, and Henry Newman from Instrumental. Now let's get to the show.
All right, we're back, and this week on Radio Free HPC, I thought I'd bring up the topic of exascale. Not
really?
That we haven't, you know, explored this before, but some new stories are out from our friends at the Exascale Report, and they've enlisted some very well-known HPC folks to write some articles, and first one up is Bill Gropp. Bill is from NCSA, and he has an interesting, kind of a short editorial, but the point of it, guys, is that... to make exascale a reality, we need to stop talking just about exascale. I think he makes a very good point.
Yeah, I do too. The key to anything like this is to talk about what the real need is. And we need to talk much more about what large-scale systems, exascale systems, can do that we can't do today and the benefits that they're going to provide.
But Dan, I mean, you just said the word that Bill said not to say, and that's exascale. I think we ought to talk about the problems we need to address. And I think
yes.
Bill Harrod at SC 12 talked a little about it. What are the problems that need to get solved that we can't solve today? And what are the computational requirements for those problems?
Yeah, exactly. I think that makes a lot of sense. You see this referred to anecdotally a few times, but you don't see the sort of crisp laying out of, if we had a system of this size, here's what we could do that we can't do today, and here's the problems it would solve that we can't solve today.
And I said something, and I'm going to correct myself. I said computational, and I think it's the whole system. And I think, as we've talked about before, it's the operating system. It's the resiliency. It's the CPUs. It's the interconnect, and it's the storage.
No,
and it's the system and the debugger and all of that.
No, I disagree. I mean, you're talking about this from a system standpoint. I'm talking about this from a problem standpoint in terms of human problems. That if we had systems of this size, here's what it could do in material science. Here's what it could do in chemistry. Here's what it could do in health science,
but
for
Dan,
instance.
A system of this size,
I'm avoiding the exascale word.
You might need different balances of the things I mentioned in each of the problem areas you mentioned. I don't think there's one system per se that will meet all the requirements for the problems you discussed.
It will, because it will solve the biggest problem facing us today, which is, how do you run the biggest LINPAC? It will be a solution for that, absolutely.
Well, it's interesting that Bill did bring that up a little bit in his in what he said.
So a follow-up article with this was written by Mike Bernhardt, an interview with Mr. Harrod, and he came up with the three noble truths of exascale. And along those lines, Henry, the first one is, he says, the journey and what we learn going down that path is far more important than the achievement of building any one or two systems. And I think what he's talking about there is that, you know, what we learn from building an and running an exascale will help at a much lower level on the petascale machines, and how to do science at more of the working man level.
Well, it's along the lines of the space program giving us Tang, in giving us Velcro and Teflon.
I think Teflon was before the space program, Dan.
Well, just go with me. I'm on a roll here. They also gave us those little smoky Link sausages, too. The space program did. And Slinkies. That came out of the space program.
Didn't we get microwave ovens out of that deal as well?
No, microwave ovens? Legos?
We got microwave ovens, I think, out of submarines.
Pens that'll write upside down?
After World War II.
Well, it's all goodness.
It's all good. It's all good. But I think that's, seriously, I think that's a big part of it, is that that building these systems will bring a lot of advances in probably unanticipated and even unimaginable places.
And I think that's probably true, but I still think that as part of building it is what do you have to build to solve what problem? And I don't think there's just one system that's going to solve one of these problems, because there's going to be different balance requirements. Some problems can be decomposed differently.
True. Is there a set of buckets for the different balance points for different types of systems to approach these problems?
I don't think so, because we don't know the problems we need to solve at that scale yet. And that's what I think Bill Harrod was talking about in terms of learning as we go. You're not going to flip a switch in a code and all of a sudden say, oh, well, I'm going to run that from 500, 800 teraflops to a petaflop to flip another switch and run at, you know, 10 petaflops and flip another switch and do 100. There's going to be all kinds of things that need to happen to go to move forward.
Yes, but in terms of the kind of problems that will require an exascale system, are they simply the same types of computation and problems that we're approaching today, but on a smaller scale? We're going to scale them up? Or are you talking about entirely new, different sorts of things to do?
I think some of them will be similar to today, that you're going to do it far smaller resolutions, but others are things that you can't even do today, and you're going to have to figure out how to do it and how to program it and how to simulate it.
You have an example of anything that we haven't even tried today because you just can't do it?
We haven't done a 60-day weather forecast because you can't do it.
But I would argue that falls under my example of the same kind of stuff that we're doing for a 30-day, 20-day, 10-day weather forecast.
No, there's other kinds.
Is that a different world, trying to go out that far?
Yep, there's other factors. As you go farther out, there are other factors that aren't involved in the shorter range forecast.
So more variables.
Oh, yes. But and maybe even completely things that are factors that aren't even in any forecast now.
But it could be a completely different model, in other words. Not just the same model with more variables running more stuff.
I don't think so. I'm not an expert in this area, but from what I understand, there's other factors. Rich?
You've gone quiet, Rich.
I have. I think you guys are on the right track here, because Grop's article is really that we should take the focus away from flops, right? Designing a machine that can do an exaflop might not be the right solution for the particular problems that they're going to try to solve. To me, it's like when I started learning about computers in the 70s, everyone was talking about artificial intelligence, something that still hasn't come to fruition. So I see this focus on exascale as the same kind of thing, talking about how hard it's going to be in all these aspects, but we may never see it in our reasonable lifetime.
Well, and it's interesting. We'll see how that plays out with Supercomputing 13, since he's the chair.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see if he's sort of going to put, Supercomputer 13 that will be sort of the direction.
And SC12, Henry, had something like 60 programs that at least mentioned the word exascale, some large number like that, enough for its own conference.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
But I think that the key word out of here that you said just a minute ago, Rich, is solution. And that's where you want more of, that's where I think we want more of the emphasis to be, is these exascale systems, and I'm trying not to use that word, but these much larger scale systems, the solutions that they can provide, as opposed to the LINPACK that they can turn in.
Correct. And we have talked about that till we're blue in the face on Radio Free HPC.
We've talked about it past the time that we're blue in the face.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about it some more.
Until the world gets on board.
And then we're on to what, Zeta?
No, we're on to problem solutions to problems we haven't thought about.
I think actually we should start talking about zeta scale. Let's just assume that we're at exa. That exa is just a waypoint on the way to zeta. Let's be ahead of the curve for once, guys.
Rich, I'm going to leave that to you.
All right, I think that's fun to talk about. And, you know, I came up with a new term back when we were trying to brainstorm this at Sun, and we just called it hoop-de-flops.
Hmm.
Because the numbers become meaningless, especially try writing out 10 to the 18th, and you can see what a ridiculous number that is. You can't even visualize it. It's like talking about the national debt.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's so to go on to the zeta flops or whatever, is that what's next? Zeta?
Zeta, then yada.
Zeta, yada, you know, adding three or six more zeros is equally ridiculous. There's just, you can't get your arms around that.
Sure, yada is ridiculous, but zeta? That's well within the realm. Sure.
Dan,
let's get ahead of it. Let's get ahead of the curve and start talking in terms of zeta scale.
You're going to be working a lot longer than I am if you're going to be here for Zeta.
You're going to be publishing the Zeta scale report starting next week, Dan.
It's greenfield right now. It's wide open. Nobody's talking about Zeta yet. We could be the first.
I think you should copyright it, Dan.
Well, I'm going to bet that Bernhard already has. But good stuff.
All right, guys.
We will talk to you soon.
That's it for this edition of Radio Free HPC. Thank you for listening, and be sure to check back often for new episodes. Also, check out our website for more content, links, and a place for you to let us know what you think about the show. We're at RadioFreeHPC.com. Thanks again. We'll be back with another exciting episode real soon.